I'm gonna fuck Norlander up in Silver Sword. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Dying Bad Podcast. I am Sick. And also,
hi, Sick. I'm Dad.
Hi, Dad. We are joined today by Russ Steinberg. Yeah, and Peter Barr.
What's up?
Okay. And Megan Marr.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
I feel great.
That's great. And our producer, Alex Cohen.
Hello, hello.
And this episode one of the Dimebag Podcast is brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut.
I've heard of J. Timothy's Tavern. I've heard they have the best chicken on earth.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. So UConn's good again. And
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like? What was the game like?
I thought the game felt like it was like a back in the day Big East game. Like the place was rowdy. It was loud as hell from start to finish. And I think my favorite moment of the game was during one of the three shot clock violations that UConn managed to get Florida to commit. It was so loud in the building. The kid wasn't even trying to get a shot off because he couldn't hear his teammates telling him the shot clock was running down. He just had no idea what was going on. Because it was so loud, it was just like completely disorienting.
He didn't even notice for like a second or two afterwards. Like they had to be like, the shot clock ran out like a little while ago. And he's just dribbling around, can't hear anything. Like,
what's going on?
It felt very empowering as a fan to be like, I was part of the noise that made that happen.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I just can't help but feel like if we were a little better, just a little better, we might have won by 10. No, we got to take responsibility as fans. No, the fans were dope. They were as dope as they've ever been. I walked away from the game thinking, you know, that's right up there with some of the best atmospheres I've ever been in. I think about Texas in 03. I think about
Nova 06,
the last time Florida was here in 13.
Oklahoma 04.
Oklahoma, yep. I was thinking of. It wasn't Texas. It was Oklahoma in 04. That's what I was thinking of. That game was incredible.
Texas was 2010.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
I can't help
it. I thought the student section was especially top-notch. They were rowdy the whole time.
Yeah, the students are really bringing it. Some of the olds are like, whatever, but the students are killing it.
That's kind of how it's always been.
Yeah. I mean, call it an unfair generalization if you must, but old people are pretty much no good at everything.
I really appreciated the a cook block sign that a student got onto the Jumbotron.
And was on the Jumbotron for like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A cook block.
Because it doesn't read that way when you look at them.
So who do you think, like, who impressed you during the game?
Poppers. Carlton.
Alex.
Polly.
Isaiah Whaley
out of nowhere. Poppers. I mean, not out of nowhere, but not where I thought.
He had some solid minutes. He got some good rebounds, scored some points, played some good defense.
I was
very impressed.
I was of the mind that they should have just left him in and not put Carlton back in, which was wrong. It was wrong of me to think that. But I feel like I had a valid reason for thinking it based on how he had been playing to that point.
Carlton was also really bad to start. That's what I'm saying.
He's
had a nice close. Yeah,
he stunk in the beginning, and then he dominated the game down the stretch. Yeah.
They also played pretty well when he was out.
I also think Christian Vitale played the most mature game I've ever seen him play.
Yep.
Solid decision-making. He chose his shots really well. Like, you looked at the stat line at the end, and he actually didn't take that many shots. He made all of his free throws. He had a boatload of assists. He had another four steals. He's currently sixth in the nation in steals per game. I thought the end of the game when he, instead of going in for the dunk, he like dribbled it out. I was like, he made a smart decision.
This is a thing that divides us. This is a thing that divides us, actually.
The dude was right on his back. It was absolutely the right move. And they didn't know what to do with it. And he ended up being able to run the clock out, and they won the game. So
it all happened so fast. I don't remember what it looked like. But if he was going to make the dunk, he should have, because it would have been good for UConn's net and UConn's offensive efficiency, which are the only two things that matter.
Yeah. Listen, no, I remember when he turned away from the hoop, the first thought in my head is, oh my God, that's the most grown up thing I've ever seen him do.
It was very grown up.
It was just smart, good basketball. And from the least likely source on the court. And
I feel like we'd feel very differently about Vital if he had spent his career on teams where there was a reliable scorer. Mm-hmm. And he was like the secondary guy who played tough defense and dove on the floor. We'd love him. He'd feel like Ricky Moore. I mean, I love him, but I feel like he gets a lot of criticism because there are times where he forces shots. But sometimes, like in the St. Joe's game, who was supposed to be taking those shots? We don't have consistent scorers on this team.
Speaking of which, I will say another person who really impressed me, despite his line for the game, was Alterique Gilbert. As awful as he was for a lot of that game, at least shooting, the fact that he stuck with it and that one floater he had in the final, I don't remember when it was, when it hung on the rim for like 10 minutes and finally dropped in. Just the fact that his confidence has been completely shot and that he's still playing like that's not the case, like that, I think that says a lot about him.
And taking the ball right at Blackshear when Blackshear had four fouls to foul him out of the game. I mean, that you could argue that was the most important play of the game.
Yeah.
Two of Blackshear's fouls actually were Gilbert driving in on him.
That was like
you got him once in the first half too.
That was with like three minutes and 30 seconds left too.
Almost 5 minutes.
Yeah. It was almost five. It was a while.
Was it really?
He came back before
I thought it was after the under four, but I could be wrong.
No,
it was right before it.
Rewatched it. It was like almost 5 minutes left on the clock.
I haven't rewatched this game yet, and I'm really excited to do it.
I did. It was fun.
Good things always happen when Gilbert drives, I feel like.
Yeah,
certainly better than when he shoots.
Well, yeah, the fact that he is completely forgotten. He's like Chuck Knobloch level outside shooter at this point.
And then he also hit a step back that had no business going in and looked great.
Yeah, that was cool.
With a minute left. So, I mean, if you're going to go 1-for-10 jump shooting, like at least you pick the right time to hit it.
Yeah,
I did think he made really good decisions down the stretch. He was very comfortable with the ball in his hand. He was running the offense really well. Like, I feel like that was like the big takeaway from the whole game was like everybody made good decisions. Everyone played really hard, particularly on defense. Wire to wire, it was really solid, hard-nosed defense. And I feel like that was very heartening for me because they were awful on offense at the beginning. And until like Vital started making some shots, and Gilbert was awful on offense, like shooting-wise, the whole game.
Yeah.
The fact that they managed to stay with Florida the whole game because of the defense and because they like, they didn't have that many turnovers. They didn't make any stupid plays. They were going after every 50-50 ball. They did well on the glass. Like, there was one play where Carlton, like, tipped a rebound and Whaley, like, threw himself on the floor to get the ball so it didn't go to Florida. And, like, that was, like, the whole game to me. It was just, like, guys doing whatever they had to do to get a win. And, like, yeah, Florida might suck, but they don't suck that hard.
Yeah, I mean, the probably the most encouraging thing about the entire game for me is that UConn was able to beat a team that is very clearly better than they are. And
in terms of personnel.
Yes. And they did it exactly how you said, Megan, by playing really, really good defense, playing really, really hard, and just getting, you know, offensively getting what they could when they absolutely had to. And that's how they're going to have to beat good teams this year. Like, UConn's not great. So, but they could beat a Florida, and Florida, you know, even if they're not the Final Four type team that maybe we thought at the beginning of the year, like, they're still pretty good. They're still
top
25 team.
But get into that a little bit, because a lot of the narrative surrounding the result of the game has been about how bad Florida is, and they're pointing to the loss against unranked FSU. They're pointing to Towson, or however the fuck you say that name.
Towson.
Okay.
I think we should call them Russ.
Maryland is
weird. So, I mean, Florida's played four games and they have not looked good in any of them. And they were a team that was like a trendy Final Four pick at the beginning of the year. They beat, I think, North Florida by like 15, but that game, I think, was close the entire way. Then they lost to Florida State, who lost to Pitt.
Lost to Pittsburgh.
Who lost to Nicholls State.
Eastern Carolina.
Yeah.
Where's FSU in KenPom right now?
They're actually pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
But
like 15.
But Florida is supposed to be better. And they lost at home to them, and then they lost to a UConn team that had just gotten destroyed by St. Joseph's. So Florida's not as good as we thought. But talent-wise and personnel-wise, they are a whole lot better than UConn, or at least they should be. And the fact that UConn was able to frustrate them that much defensively is really encouraging. I mean, we've talked about it 100 times on this first ever UConn podcast that, you know, Dan Hurley's teams, the way they improve year one to year two, more than anything, is on defense. And we've started to see it.
I feel like I got to stick up for our team a little bit, because you said something in there that was interesting. You said they got destroyed by St. Joseph's. And like, yeah, it certainly felt that way because we were down a lot at one point. But to be fair to the team, they did claw it back so that it wasn't a total destruction.
Yeah, and it was really encouraging to see them pretty much entirely erase a 27-point deficit.
Yeah.
But the fact that they fell behind by 27 was very concerning.
I'm just making the point that they weren't technically destroyed. They were beaten fairly narrowly. What's that?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good game, but I think, like, I mean, the St. Joe's game was fucking stupid. Like, it was the stupidest basketball game that's ever happened. These kid, like, this white kid shooting fucking threes like his life depended on it. It was ludicrous. It was a ludicrous game, and they looked like they had never seen a basketball for the first 7 minutes of the game. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. But I will say there was 15 minutes in the second half there where I was like, oh, you actually do know how to play basketball. Like, if that's how they had played over the course of that entire game, they would have beat St. Joe's by 30. But, like, they did not show up for the first 7 minutes. And, like, they didn't show up a whole lot on offense for the first 5 minutes of the game against Florida. But because their defense did show up, it ended up being fine.
Yeah. It would be cool if we could start scoring sometime in the first 5 minutes of games instead of not scoring at all. That would be better.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like it.
Did we all see the thing about where Hurley called the first five plays of the game?
Oh, no.
And we did not look like we were. They were scripted the first five sets, and we came zero close to making
those
any
were
of those.
Sets?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, the
lob. Yeah.
Yeah, the first one was a lob. I think we forced it into Carlton maybe one or two more times in those five, and then I don't remember the other two, but I think they were turnovers.
There was a couple of missed layups in there also, just absolute fucking bunnies that should have gone in.
That missed dunk.
Yeah, the missed dunk. There was a missed three in there, like a wide open three from somebody in there. Like, there were some good shots, but they just, like, the actual shot themselves was fucking hideous. It was not executed well, for sure.
Yeah, and going back to something you said earlier, Megan, about how they're playing smarter, you know, not only 9 turnovers in the whole game, and only 4 of those turnovers were committed by the guards, which is pretty impressive.
That is actually really good. Because they're handling the ball a lot, not pissing the ball away. Carlton had 4, I think.
Carlton had 4 himself.
And I think that's why his ass got sent to the bench.
I just remembered that shit. I don't even have the stats.
Genius brain.
Well, crazy. I do have the stats. Yeah, Carlton had 4, Polly had 1, and then Gilbert and Vital had 2 apiece.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And one of Vital's was one of those dumb stepping out of bounds things that he's for at least once a game.
God damn it. What do you guys think of a Cook?
That was maybe my favorite 0-point game for any UConn player in history. I like, if a Cook is going to rebound like that, if he's going to play defense like that, if he's going to block shots like that, he had that one little move on the baseline where he, spun around a guy and blew the layup, but it was a beautiful move, and, he'll dunk that eventually. You could see the makings of a really, really good player there, and that's extremely exciting because he's a difference maker.
He looks like a high major player.
He had 7 defensive rebounds. 7. I that's better than I was expecting, because the first game I was like, oh, does he know how to rebound at all?
His highlight reels did not look like he was a good rebounder, but he did look like he was a good shot blocker. So I'm glad that that has translated.
Yeah.
So something fun about our rebounding in that game is that usually we see Vital as a huge part of the rebounding. Not so in this game. He had 4 total rebounds and all of them on the offensive end. So I think we're probably doing a better job of getting our bigs involved in the defensive rebounding.
Yeah, Whaley had 6 defensive rebounds in 17 minutes.
Polly had 4, which might be more crazy than that, because Polly does not rebound.
Polly is the worst rebounder I've ever seen.
And I like Polly a lot, and he had a pretty good game on Sunday, but if he's grabbing 5 boards a game, that is huge.
Yeah.
It was wild to kind of, like, after that second half, you know, I would have guessed Florida shot close to, like, 30%. In that second half, just from watching it and the way UConn held them down and made the game ugly to win, they shot like 45% or something like that, right? In the second half, like I thought UConn rebounded really well, and then you look and the rebounding like was pretty close to even. It was like
we slightly edged
even. I would have, just by the way they played. I guess they did it all efficiently because, you know, it read as much more dominant than it showed up in the stats.
It must have been like, I feel like there was a bunch of steals in the second half too. You kind of got a few extra possessions that way.
There were a couple that Vital just like put his hands out and grabbed it, like it stuck to his hands, which was great.
The other,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
a lot of deflections,
and even ones that didn't turn out to be steals. There were plenty of times where we just like knocked the ball out of their hands and went out of bounds, and you know that. Not that that necessarily is that valuable because it doesn't result in a change of possession. But it's also just sort of getting in the other team's head. You know, you're not protecting the ball, and we see that.
Yeah, and it forces them to inbound the ball, forces them to draw up a play for that, and it also forces them to kind of restart their offense without the shot clock resetting.
Yeah.
And it's a sign of activity on defense. Deflections are always one of those little things that, you know, nobody really keeps track of, but
except if you're getting more of them.
Except for the manager. God bless him.
Yeah, you know Hurley's keeping track of that shit.
Oh, yeah.
But I was really encouraged by the defense because I feel like if they can play with that level of intensity, you know, and man, like if somebody can get hot, if Gilbert can like get it together a little bit, and, you know, we haven't talked about it yet, but Book Knight's going to be available for the next game. He got into the accelerated rehabilitation program today. So, and Hurley said he's going to play. So he's going to be available for the tournament this weekend.
Will he get any credits for that or?
No.
I want to go back to what you were saying about the defense. Cause we were really getting frustrated in the St. Joe's game about how nobody could stay in front of their man.
Yeah.
And then in this game, not only were they doing a much better job of staying in front of their defender, but also there were a number of times where a Florida, you know, player would try and sort of goad someone into overcommitting, and the guys were keeping their position. They weren't lunging. They weren't getting themselves into bad positions. They still got called for too many fouls because the refs were dog shit. But there was like it was very measured, a disciplined defense, and they were but while still being very aggressive.
Yeah, even like I was watching like Brendan Adams, like it looked like a Florida guy was going to get past, but like nope, he recovered. He was right back in front of him.
He got back into position. I know exactly which play you're talking about, because I remember thinking, how did he get back there? How did he get back in front of him?
Yeah, like he thought that like he had an open lane, but he didn't. Like as soon as he started to turn the corner, Adams was right back in front of him, and I just felt like that was how they played all night long. And like there were so many plays that I just were like, oh, this is like someone who's playing with their brain, like. There was one play where in the second half, Vital made like a pass over the defense to Whaley, who was coming in from the left side, and the Florida player was flying in from the right, and Whaley like caught it and turned his body away from the other player, you know, so that he just flew right past him and he had like a completely open look. He didn't like try and complete the alley-oop. He landed and went back up and took the open, easy basket. And I was like, that is what I want. Like, let's chill with the aerial acrobatic nonsense. Like, make the smart play, take the easy bucket.
It really seems like Whaley should have been playing more last year. Yeah. Now that we're watching this.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
my he's also significantly bigger this year, though. Like, he definitely looks
stronger.
He's gained a lot of strength.
Glad.
I also just think, like, Whaley, Sid, and maybe even Carlton, maybe even Polly are just going to rotate those on and off games. Probably a Cook too. You know what I mean? Like, I was joking with you earlier, Peter, but, you know, Sid Wilson played so well in that first game and then, like, absolute shit.
Done nothing.
The next game.
He's been anonymous.
Yeah. So it's like, I just feel, I have a sense like that's what that front court is going to do. They're just going to kind of cycle on and off all year.
Fine. So my question for the group skeptics, what do we need to see from Book Knight to think that he's the guy who's going to be the difference maker between this is not a tournament team and this is a tournament team?
If he shoots the lights out?
Like, how? Like,
he's got to score. He's got to score, you know, 12 to 15 points a game for this to be like a solid tournament team.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking is because that's really what they're missing. They're missing a go-to scorer. If he can be not even an elite go-to scorer, just a guy who can hit, you know, shoot 45% and score 14 points a game, that's the one thing I think we're missing.
Yeah,
I would just like to point out that through three games, Tyler Polley currently is shooting 47% from three.
How many points a game does he have?
He currently is averaging 12.7 points a game. And 3.7 rebounds.
I have no trust in him maintaining that kind of scoring.
No. He's 48% total in field goal percentage, 47 from three, though. That's pretty much all of them.
I kind of think he can keep that up.
His shot looks beautiful.
I mean, 13 points a game. I don't know. Maybe he can be like a Rashad Anderson type, but.
Like, that, he can just go, like, the spurt he had where he had, what, 8 points in, like, a minute? Like, I feel like second, he could do that.
That second three he hit in that stretch where he was clearly not, like, didn't really have his feet under him, was still running full speed and just went up. And I was like, no fucking way. And he hits it. I was like, well, fine. Take all the shots you want. I don't care.
I was jumping up and down so vigorously during that my keys and wallet fell out. And I was going crazy.
We had to, like, scour the row looking for his things after the game.
To answer your other question, though, Peter, I feel like Book Knight also needs to be able to get the ball up the court in a way that they can sit Gilbert if he's having a really tough stretch. Because really, they have no one who I really trust to even break a press if Gilbert is on the bench.
Yeah, Gaffney does not look ready yet. And it's Cole not being eligible really stings because you just feel like what a huge difference he'd be making.
He's exactly what this team needs, yeah.
God, yeah. Gaffney got burned on defense. Like, his first, like, defensive possession, he got smoked. And, like, I don't know what the hell happened there, but it was like, yo. Like,
he got completely turned around. He got, like, yeah, he's not ready to be playing the amount of time he's playing. That's not helping.
Practice.
The fact that he missed a bunch of practice time did not help.
So it's going to be a trial by fire by him. I think they're going to have to give him some minutes because he needs some minutes, but I think he also is just going to be somebody who probably is not ready for prime time for a minute yet.
Or maybe this is like the O2 team, and, you know, we're going to get some guys, you know, we're going to get Book Knight back. The young guys will keep the conference play. We're a much more cohesive unit, and they start winning a lot of games, and then, you know, who knows what happens. They certainly have the pieces. It's the high end talent that I feel like is missing. Yeah. But there's guys who,
Karan on this team.
Yeah, if a Cook gets more consistent, if Book Knight can come in and start scoring points, if Carlton can start doing what he's been doing in the second half, starting in the first half, I don't think we're going to get more than we're getting out of Vital. I hope that Gilbert can start shooting better than 20% or whatever he has to be shooting right now. Because that's
I'd like
not
to get Polly some more shots because I feel like they're not going to him early enough in the game and he's not like they're not getting him looks when he's open and he's making shots. Like, get that man some more looks.
He's always going to be a little limited because he can't create his own shot. No. Like, he's never going to have him like break a guy down and get off a three. It's always going to be in the rotation.
Like Gilbert can drive. If anything, he can still drive. And like the ball movement, I feel like has been really solid. Guys are moving well off the ball. Like they have to be trying to get Polly open looks from the 3-point line.
He's got the perfect guy there to talk to him about not shooting at all with Talik.
Yeah. Is that why Gilbert can't shoot now?
Because Talik's been elevated every to an shot. Assistant.
Oh, no.
So now after the last two games with the bad loss and the big win, like, has your outlook changed at all? Anyone want to update their preseason projections?
No, I still feel like it's a bubble team. Like, they could still be in it in February. You know, we might be talking about how many games do they need to win in the conference tournament to make it. Like, I feel like that's probably where they're going to be. If they win 20 games a season, I would be very happy about
it. It's amazing how differently I would feel if they had just completed the comeback against St. Joe's.
Oh, I know, right?
And they were 3-0 now with a win over Florida.
I would be saying we're going to win the national championship. As opposed to now, I just think we're going to go to the Final Four.
Right. I mean, for a little while on Sunday, you could have maybe told me we were going to win the national championship. I was very excited.
There was an energy, you know, there really was. It felt good. It felt
walking out of Gamble with, like, the students doing the UConn Huskies chant was, like, gave me goosebumps.
We were walking behind these two girls, and one of them goes, God, can you imagine how cool it would have been to be here when they won the national championship? And I was like, it was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's hard because you have three wildly different data points. And the one thing that points to is just inconsistency. And inconsistent teams are capable of making the tournament if they have a few more things go right than go wrong. I mean, and this goes back to the conversation that you and I had, Tyler, on, I think, the last pod was, you know, you were very pessimistic, I was very optimistic, and we basically figured out that for your vision to come true, it would take more things going wrong than go right. And for me, it would take more things going right than going wrong. And I think I'm still there. It's still, if you take it on balance, unfortunately, it looks like those characteristics might still be there for us to just, like, not come out strong against a team that we really should beat.
I'm not wavering from my pessimistic version of that view either, but, like, I think they can win almost any game that they ugly up the way that they uglied up the Florida game. I'm not sure that they can consistently ugly a game up enough. Like, I think it's the other parts of it. Like, I don't trust them to rebound well and defend well for 40 minutes yet.
I'm starting to trust. I feel like maybe you just still have some Ollie PTSD, Tyler, and like.
Well, and I watched the St. Joe's
PTSD.
Yeah, there's that too. There's that too. But
first half Sacred Heart PTSD.
Yeah.
If we did this pod after the St. Joe's game, you'd all be agreeing with me.
If we did this pod after the St. Joe's game, I don't think we would have a podcast anymore.
No. No, but I feel like that's the kind of thing, like, you have to assume that Hurley can teach them how to do this, you know? Like, and it's been interesting because I've been hearing, you know, listening to some, like, interviews he was giving about how they did things from the St. Joe's loss to this game, and were like, how hard they practiced them, and that they watched every single minute of the St. Joe's game, like, not just, like, the edited version. They watched the whole thing and, like, really, like, did it, like, really got into, like, what they did wrong and how they have to prepare differently. It wasn't just a, like, y'all fucked up, like, do better. It was, this is what we didn't do correctly, and this is how we're going to do it correctly from now on. And then they came out and did it. They did the things.
Did you hear about Hurley's night after the St. Joe's game?
Yes.
Tell
the people, Russ.
Yeah. Apparently, after the St. Joe's game, Dan Hurley was on the phone with his assistants for 3 hours. Until like 2 in the morning. Then got into bed, his wife right there next to him, and had a conversation with himself for another 90 minutes about the game because he couldn't sleep. What a psycho.
Andrea. I mean, God bless that woman. Seriously. Like,
I don't know. There's a part of me that doesn't think that's psychotic. Like, I just get it.
I mean,
listen, I
whom amongst us does
myself,
not.
I was talking to myself a lot, too.
No, like I would obsess over I do obsess over sports results like that. I mean,
well, like, you're also psychotic.
Yeah, but that's why it doesn't seem crazy to me, because I do it.
We should not be the baseline for sanity.
I don't know. I just don't think he's that crazy. He's like,
I remember very clearly when I was at the 2009 Final Four and we lost that game, that fucking road game, and just like trudging through the streets of Detroit back to my hotel room and just being like talking to myself, like, what if Kemba hit more shots? What if Dyson was here? We would have won the national championship.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What if Denim Brown's shot had gone in at the end of the George Mason game?
Wow. Yeah.
It's good to have a crazy coach who cares about winning as much as all of us idiots who spend money and spend time watching this team every game.
I really enjoyed watching Hurley after the game, and like he went over and like, you know, gave the student section a big round of applause, and then he just like hugged Christian Vitale like so hard. And like, I don't know exactly what they were saying, but like you kind of got the gist of it, and like you could just see he was so happy for, like, so proud of him. It was a really beautiful moment.
They were saying, I love you, bro.
You know what that reminded me of, Megan? It's after UConn beat Indiana at Indiana, and Calhoun came into the press conference covered in sweat.
Yeah.
He says, this is from all of my players, from hugging them after the game.
It was actually cute, because when Hurley left, he like left out the student section, and they're all like slapping him on the back, like, yeah, good job, coach. Like, and you know, he's loving every second.
And he also turned and said, he pointed to his neck and said, careful, my neck.
Do not harm the coach.
Imagine if he'd gotten killed right there.
Oh, God.
We then elevate Talik Brown to head coach.
George Blaney would descend from the rafters.
I see George Blaney coming down with an umbrella. Like,
I would run over and suffocate him. He is not putting his terrible, shitty fingers on this team ever again.
Jim Calhoun appears. I'm back.
I would allow.
I heard
Jim Calhoun appears with all of his K cups.
Speaking of the rafters, though, one of the things that I liked in Gamble, so they have these things for the retired numbers for Lobo and Allen, and they have like these nice spotlight on them, and it looks really nice. And then it immediately opposite that, on the other side of the arena, they have the things for all the American teams, and there is no spotlight on that, and I enjoyed that.
I would like them to add a spotlight next year for the Big East.
Yes, agreed.
Peter and I were talking about that. We're like, next year, all those shitty, shitty banners will be gone, and in their place will be all of our friends from the Big East.
Well, we were talking about this also at the game. We want, after the last sporting event at Gamble this year, we want there to be like a ceremony where some guy goes onto the court and just scratches that American logo off.
I want to burn the banners. I want to put them all in a pile and douse them in gasoline and set that shit on fire.
I bet Hurley would do it himself.
You know, in a responsible manner.
There's your cold open.
I bet Hurley would do it himself.
Yeah, Hurley fucking hates this conference.
Yeah.
I hate them. I want to get out. Get away from these people. I'm so sick of them. I hate them so much. But we're leaving. It's fine. I can handle them for the rest of the year.
It's funny how UConn's own beat writers don't understand why we hate the American.
Peter, a lot of people laughed at your recruiting article, or not, your announcement article for Javonte Brown.
Oh, Ferguson. Yeah, because the one that I wrote while they were getting their asses beat by St. Joe's.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Oh, wait, I didn't read it. What
is that? Messaged me. That was really funny.
I was writing mad, and so I wrote about both things at once.
Yeah. Oh, you know,
like, maybe they can bring in a player who can fucking shoot, unlike Christian Vitale, apparently.
I had wanted to, and I forgot to do this. I had wanted to pull up all of your Slack messages from that game just to read them now.
We should, like, shut down the athletic department.
Failure.
We're going to win, like, the national championship.
You said Dan Hurley is just an Atlantic 10 coach.
That one, that was after you'd already called me out, so I was going to see where I could go with it. But they were, I got pretty unhinged at one point.
I so badly wanted to start putting your own Sid Wilson slacks back in there, but you were having a little bit of an existential crisis, and I thought that might be too mean.
Oh, God.
I'm reading your thing now, Peter.
Okay. So read it aloud for everyone.
Don't come to me for a bit. I can't.
Yeah. There's no reason to ever visit our blog. We will narrate all of our posts to you in the podcast.
Nevertheless, he was heavily pursued by a number of major programs, with Kansas remaining involved until the end, and will be a huge help for a UConn team that, at time of this publication, is getting its ass kicked by St. Joseph's.
Yeah.
So good. There you go. Wait, hold on. Expect the staff to continue to keep track of available players going into the spring, hopefully targeting someone who could hit a fucking shot. Good God. How are they 11 for 42 right now?
It was originally 11 for 40, and then they missed the next two shots. So I went back and changed it.
If Hurley can continue to improve the talent level, the team should be set up to never be embarrassed like this again. Well done.
That was an impressive feat.
That's some gonzo journalism there, baby.
There we go.
Inside the blog.
Peter, while we're on the subject, tell us a little bit about Javonte Brown Ferguson.
He is very tall.
He's a large boy.
And I think he'll, he's one of those guys. He gets off the ground quick. I think he's going to be a real impact shot blocker and rebounder. I watched a game he played against Redemption. I don't remember. where he basically took over the game in the second half. He ended up with something like 35 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, something like that. So, you know, it's tough because you're watching him play high school level games against. One else is quite that big. No one else is quite that athletic. He's going to be young coming in. He's going to need some polish, but I think his ceiling is super duper high. You know, so we'll see. We'll see what, if in a couple of years, you know, he's ready to be. I think he's going to get minutes next year as a backup. He'll be an effective backup, but by the time he's a sophomore, if he's ready to like be the starter and like play 25, 30 minutes a game and be an impact guy, I think we could be in a position to be, you know, a really good team at that point. If everybody's still around, you know, if they continue to recruit well. But he's got a lot of skills, he's got a lot of upside, but he's gonna take some time.
Oh, speaking of large boys, we saw the large boy from Bristol at Williamson Pizza and then also
at the
co-op. Yeah. He's quite tall.
I spotted him coming out the door. I was like, holy shit, that's a really, really tall person. And then all his friends had Bristol Central sweatshirts on. I was like, I get it.
No, it's just because he was standing near me.
But he ducked coming out the door.
He was really 5'11".
He was a big boy. So this is like at least the second time he's been on campus for games this season, because he was here for first night. So, yeah.
I think he's ours if we want him. I don't think if we want him on the team, I think they'll be able to get him.
I only want him so that Syracuse can't have him.
I want them to run out of players.
Yeah.
I want them to have to start recruiting from that fucking shitty message board where they're all mad. Like all these, like, think about how despondent we were during the St. Joe's game. That's Syracuse fans all the time right now, because they're staring down the barrel of where is this program going? Because they've got they're shackled to this coach who's not committed to the job anymore, hates all of his players.
He's mailing it in for real.
Yeah,
I mean, he's faxing it in. This is, but point being, and they can't fire him because he still wins just enough that it would be ridiculous to fire the coach who's been there for 40 years. And the longer he goes, the less likely it gets that they'll be able to bring Hopkins back when he leaves. I mean, they'll be able to get somebody. I like, probably if they want to hire Kevin Willard, he'll go there. But I don't know. If I were a Syracuse fan, I would be very agitated right now.
Yeah, always being middle of the pack of the ACC, getting beat out for recruits by us.
Always being in, like, always being in fucking Syracuse.
Yeah, they.
Yeah, snowing there right now.
They are a miserable bunch, and I love it.
In fact, no matter what time you're playing this podcast, it is snowing in Syracuse.
It's dark. It's dark there all the time, 24 hours a day.
It's like that Ray Bradbury story. Like every few years, it stops snowing for a few hours. And then it's right back to. That's a that is a reference for four people that are listening to this podcast.
All four of them
on the podcast.
Yeah, I was right gonna now. Say because that's like 45% of the people. Because who's listening to this podcast right now? It's Russ's dad.
My dad does not listen to this podcast.
All right, so
three people.
I can't imagine anyone from J. Tim's. Is listening.
It's my friend Sarah. You've all talked to her before.
Sarah?
Sarah's listening.
Hi, Sarah.
People tell me they listen to the podcast. Like, I hear this.
Brian Koffel's probably listening.
You're hearing it more and more.
It's Sarah and Brian Koffel, and that's
you love to hear.
That is it.
Somebody apparently went to J. Timothy specifically because of David Benedict Cumberbatch.
the world's most popular character, David Benedict Cumberbatch.
I wonder if he's going to stop by today.
Who knows?
I can't wait.
Sometimes you hear a whistle in the wind.
Listen, it's going to be a Netflix series, okay?
Wait, was that the whistle in the wind right there?
There's someone whistling here. I don't know. Can anyone hear that besides me?
Oh, my God. Is it David Benedict Cumberbatch?
Good evening. Good evening.
Welcome to the pod.
How are, so good to join you.
David Benedict, did you watch the Florida game?
I did. I was watching it from my vacation home in Shropshire.
That's also your real home, according to every podcast. Whoa.
I have a separate home down the road.
Oh, okay.
For vacation time.
I often vacation
next to a different lake.
Shropshire is huge. There's almost 400 houses. Wow. It's the biggest town in England.
How many in pounds?
Who the fuck listens to this?
Is that 400 metric houses or what?
David, are you here to tell us about the fine fare and beverages at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut?
I absolutely would love to. I would love to tell you about the When Stouty Went on Holiday, which is a stout imperial double milk from Five Churches Brewing in New Britain, Connecticut. That's 9.1% alcohol by volume. It is quite stout, if I do say so.
Did you say two milks?
A double milk, yes. That is a delicacy in England.
So I know cows one. What's the other?
Meat.
Who?
It's the East guy. You don't know him.
I'm sure he's a fine chap.
He's all right.
Does he like cricket?
He fucking loves cricket. The weirder a sport... You can make up some shit, and he'd be an expert in it already.
Perhaps we might get on over a pint at the local lodge in Shropshire.
By the lake.
By the lake, not by the road.
As is tradition.
As is tradition. We could have a beautiful plate of beans, followed by some toast made of beans, and some delicious bean ice cream. It'd be wonderful.
Wow.
What was the point of that? Go to J. Timothy's. They're wonderful.
And drink that milk beer.
Have both of the milks.
Two milks.
Double milk.
It's two.
You know, they say the sun never sets on the British Empire, but in Syracuse, there is no sun at all.
All right, David. Well, thank you, and thank you to the fine folks at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut.
I'm so sorry.
Did he just blow away in the wind?
He blew away before he could tell us to buy football tickets.
Oh, shit.
It's okay. It doesn't matter.
Nobody listens.
Who plays David Benedict Cumberbatch in the David Benedict Cumberbatch movie?
Meech.
David Benedict.
I was hoping for Benedict Cumberbatch, I guess.
I guess that would make sense, but no, it'll be me doing that accent for 3 hours.
It's a three-hour epic.
I would pay.
And just going in and out of the accent. Like,
directed by Zack
Snyder. The origin
Snyder.
Story.
I would pay so much money to watch a feature-length film of Meech doing that the entire time.
Hey, we have a bunch of mailbag questions if somebody wants to head to the ADB mentions.
All right, I'm going to go for the ones that we didn't already cover. Not doing the one about work ethic, because that's going to be racist.
Saw that one and a hard pass.
No. B. Schwartz writes, will UConn rally around Davina and beat the Lady Vols by 50?
Yes.
Yes.
70.
Yeah.
I would also like to be Schwartz.
They're looking pretty good, I gotta say. And Tennessee sucks. And
not in like a Red Sox suck, Yankees suck kind of way. They actually suck.
They suck.
So more like a Red Sox suck kind of way.
Yeah.
We are going to destroy them. It's gonna be great. But I'm really kind of enjoying where the team's at. It's gonna be kind of like it's gonna be a much tougher season to watch. And you know, there certainly are some losses possible in the future, but it's already starting to look pretty fun. So I'm excited for the season.
If it's a tie game and there's you can ask the ball in the last possession, who do you want taking the shot?
Crystal.
See, the thing is, and that what I like about it is I'm comfortable with that ball in several people's hands. I'm comfortable with it in Olivia's hands. I'm comfortable with it in Kristen Williams' hands. I'm comfortable with it in Megan Walker's hands. I'm comfortable with it in Crystal's hands.
Or Russ.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take the shot.
The one thing I keep thinking about when I watch this team play is that person who I'm just overwhelmingly comfortable with. I don't see that person on this team.
Yeah, I don't either. Me taking the big shot reminded me that we also have to mention, related to stomp, stop, clap guy, the guy who at the timeout yesterday had a chance to take three shots from anywhere on board.
Oh God, that was awful.
Various prizes. Decided to take three layups and missed all three.
Bricked them. Like, didn't even get it above the rim. I think he was from Vernon.
Yeah, he was.
From my hometown. He's not allowed back. I have decreed.
He's been changed. King Vernon. I don't even live here anymore.
Any other women's basketball thoughts?
I really like Aubrey Griffin. She actually had a really good game in this last game against Temple, which they won by a pretty good score. But Aubrey came off the bench. She played for like 17 minutes, and she was 3 for 4 from the floor. 3 for 5 from the free throw line because she got fouled a bunch and she got 8 rebounds. So I was like, hey.
I'm really excited that we brought in a foreign player with a Space Aliens game. Like,
she can't shoot yet.
She's good at basketball in like totally weird ways. She's like, she's contributing, but like, it's like watching a different thing happen. You know, it's like you're not.
Her ratio is like 7 to 1 right now. It's bonkers.
We're talking about a wing. Anna Makarat, by the way.
Yeah, and she's really excellent in transition. She makes really great passes running up the floor. Like, I watched her make one, like, cross court, like, thread the needle pass, hit her man exactly right on the run. She's a really excellent passer. She can, like, get some penetration, kick it out. She plays good defense. She's still terrified to shoot. I don't know.
She's kind of got, like, that Mel Thomas thing going on where, like, she's not going to score many points.
Oh,
but like,
careful.
Like, she's contributing enough that you want her on the court.
Yeah.
Careful. And I feel like when there's
one of the things she does well is she captures Meech's heart.
Well, and I think the thing is when you have like, so Olivia, you know, you can play in the post or she can sort of, she's got this little like, you know, foul line ish game. Kristen can, you know, make her own shot, but she can get some penetration. She can shoot. Crystal can shoot. Megan can score from anywhere on the floor. And then you've got Makarat, who's this great passer and can get the ball people. and moves really well without the ball. I think she's a real asset to this offense that, like, to function well has to be, like, moving and quick and backdoor cuts and hitting passes. And I think she's really valuable for that style.
I just want to point out, I was not thinking of Mel Thomas. Mel Thomas actually did score a fair number of points. Who's the girl who played a wing as a wing? Kelly something?
Kelly Ferris.
Oh, Ferris.
There we go. There we go.
Who was still in the WNBA as of beginning of last season.
Good. She should be, because she was a good player. She just didn't score a lot of points. If just give me a second to verify that is true.
Can't believe we have to apologize to Mel Thomas on the Dimeback podcast.
Wow.
This is a dark day.
She scored 4 points a game as a freshman. So she was scoring double figures by his senior year, but most of her career, not a lot of points. But she was always effective. Like, she was like 8 points and 7 rebounds as a sophomore with a ton of assists. This is actually working out pretty well, this comparison. I'm feeling good.
Glad you're talking yourself into it.
Macarat is going to be Kelly Ferris. It is great content. It is known.
Do we have any other questions?
Yeah, we'll wrap it up with our buddies Anonymous Eagle, Marquette Blog. Yeah. The Big East, underrated, overrated, or fairly rated?
I think it's fairly rated as one of the best basketball conferences because that's what it is.
Underrated by certain Connecticut columnists who seem incapable of doing appropriate comps and who think schools like Xavier and Marquette and Creighton are appropriate comps for Tulsa and ECU and Tulane. Those people should learn a little bit more about basketball before they start writing about it again.
Or they should just never start writing about it again.
My answer to this question is that the Big East
BC is currently... Penis.
The Big East is currently over... Hey, come on. I had a good one.
That was a good one.
Big East is currently overrated, soon to be underrated.
I think that's good.
It makes sense.
They're underrated. They're all bad right now, and then in like 7 months they're going to get really good. And I think we all agree there.
It's funny. I actually think the opposite, because right now I'm gassing the Big East up all year until UConn leaves, and then as soon as we enter that conference, it is
fuck all those teams.
Everybody,
Providence is pissed. St. John's is
St. John's. Are you kidding me? Fuck St. John's.
St. John's is dog shit now.
Are you kidding me? St. John's.
Seton Hall is cocky duty.
Peter, St. John's.
Is that even a school?
Are you kidding me?
I'm not. I'm not kidding you.
Okay.
I would never kid. Georgetown is a diarrhea festival.
But like, until then, I'm going to talk about how great they are. But when we get there, I'm going to talk just massive amounts of shit.
That's... I'm really happy for DePaul right now.
Actually, 5-0. I am too.
National champion DePaul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Go, Dave.
Looking forward
to seeing Dave. Will bring his team to the White House.
Yeah.
Friend of the podcast, Dave Leto.
Is he?
Is he?
He's Meech's friend.
Friend he of said the podcast, Troy Wainwright.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of the Dimeback Podcast. Until next time, see you later.
I don't know why you find me grunting funny, but you finding it funny is funny to me.
If I knew why, I would stop finding it funny. You think I like living like this?
No.